Hello, friends and folks, and welcome back to another playlist podcast from Scanline Media, where we talk about what we've been playing. I'm Six Detmar, obviously from Scanline Media.
I'm Jennifer Uncle, also from Scanline Media.
I'm Kyrie Page, and who'd have thunk it, I'm also from Scanline Media.
Wait, how many of us are there these days?
I guess it depends on how much we would count people who are co-hosts of regular podcasts with us too. Like,
I think my policy is you if you are on a podcast with us, you have the option, but it's not necessary. So the only one that I know of who says it is Alan. So I guess there's four of us.
I guess so.
We have several other people who are welcome to claim it if they want, but you know.
Sure.
We're not gonna foist that title. We have Nick, who is of course Ray Trace Media, because he's a piece of garbage. I know what you did, Jennifer. We'll talk about it later. You knew I was gonna find out at some point.
Of course. I just wasn't sure when.
Yeah.
Shitposting in audio format.
I mean, listen, it's not that I object to shitposting in audio format. I run Bottle Crow. That's all we've done for years. However, I just thought I could keep Jen out of this whole mess. I thought I could keep her safe, and she stepped into this willingly.
She stepped into that thresher.
For more on that, you should probably check out The Garnet Wager, which is a disaster podcast for nightmare humans. But
that happens to be on the Scanline Media network of shows.
It does. Listen, the bottle crowing of The Garnet Wager is both, it's like watching a train wreck in slow-mo. Partially because it's taking a long time, and partially because the fact that it's slow-mo makes it, like, mesmerizing. You're watching this metal bend and warp, like, you know, an inch at a time, and you're like, wow, this is terrible. But we've been playing video games.
Who knew?
Yeah, we have.
Now, we have a lot of directions we can go in here. How do y'all want to start? You know what? I think I don't know what Kyrie has been playing. Jen, I bet you would, because you live with her. So I'm going to trust you. I'm going to say that I have a game that, unless you've been peeking on my PSN, you don't know that I've been playing.
That's probably right. Yeah, like I haven't turned on my PS4 in a few weeks.
Okay.
What are you talking
about? So with that knowledge,
no, like
you direct things.
Like, I haven't turned on my PS4 for anything other than YouTube, basically.
Oh, okay. I'm about to say, it's like, I don't think it's been weeks, but I don't know. I don't know. Time kind of coalesces into a singular blob as of late.
I feel like it keeps on slipping into the future.
So, I know that you've been playing certain things like Hades, Kyrie, but I'm not entirely sure, because sometimes you just take your Switch and go play stuff.
Yeah. I've been playing a couple of things. So the most recent game that I kind of want to talk about is Eikenfell. So, a full disclosure, a friend of mine worked on this game, and they didn't send me a copy or anything. I bought it with my own money. But, it did influence me to, like, check out this game. But other than that, this is, like, my honest opinion on it. It's pretty good. Eikenfell is a RPG. I forget exactly who made it exactly.
Oh, your friend.
My friend, exactly. The Nebulous My Friend. I could look that up, but that would involve clacking on the mechanical keyboard.
It appears to be Happy Ray Games.
Yes. And it is a magical school RPG in the vein of Paper Mario, and I don't know exactly where to start with it, but it is a, it's fascinating. I think they do a lot of things right. I think they do a lot of interesting things that hasn't been done in other RPGs before. So first off, like, you basically play a girl who's looking for her sister in a magical school, and you are an ordinary at first, but then you gain the ability to use magic, and you go on an adventure with a bunch of your queer friends. Which, by the way,
it'd be a short trip, right? Like, your sister's at school, and you go to school, and you're like, oh, hey, sis, you forgot your lunch, and then you go home.
Yeah, clearly. And the credits roll. Incredible. Nah, sister is missing. You gotta find what... Apparently, she's gotten into some shit at school.
Oh, no.
And... every character in it is queer. That has been confirmed by the devs. And that is immediately obvious if you play the game. You have characters literally talking like the way queer teens talk about themselves, like, on Twitter nowadays.
Just like, I wish I could have sex with that man.
Sex.
Just because I'm a man doesn't change the fact that, boy, I am so gay and would love to have sex with that man over there. We are both the same gender, but boy, sex sounds great right now.
Yeah, one thing I want to talk about is its combat system, because it's really unique. You get basically up to three characters on a grid, and you move on the grid, and then you choose a magical spell. And you then use button timings to either your attack misses and does minimum damage. It's a nice, which it does a decent amount of damage, or great, which does max damage. But there are some things that you can do, like, in the game to, like, make things easier. Like, there's a lot of accessibility options. Like, you can turn off the timing aspect of the, like, attack and defense, like, completely. If that is not your thing, like, if you just want to get maximum damage and maximum defense on every turn, you can just turn that off, or you can turn on the semi-auto mode, which basically guarantees every attack and defense will be a nice or better, or you can time it for great, but if you miss, you don't, like, lose out on damage or defense.
Gotcha.
They also do a lot of, they have content warnings, like, built into the game, which is really good for people who just don't want to deal with certain topics.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what cutscenes you want to skip, and it's fairly natural. Like, it just says content warning, like, blood, or content warning self-loathing, you know, things like that. And it, like, I think the thing that impressed me most about it is how accessible this game is. There's even an auto victory feature where you can turn this on or off, but, like, if you are in a battle and you just don't want to do the battle, but you want to get all the XP for it, you can just turn on the auto victory and you just win.
That actually, in a weird way, that reminds me of the old Fighting Fantasy books, the Choose Your Own Adventure, if anybody knows those. They were fantasy Choose Your Own Adventure games, and they had, like, stats and things, and, like, sometimes there would be times where it would ask you, like, okay, like, are you lucky? Like, roll a die, and you know, if you get, like, a 5 or a 6, a good thing happens, and turn to this page. If you get lower, turn to this page, because a bad thing happens, right?
Right.
And whenever I would read those, I would always, when it would be like, are you lucky? I would just say yes, and then turn to the good result.
Hell yeah.
It's kind of like that, and I kind of like it, because I would get into an encounter, and I've already done that type of encounter before, and it's like, I'm tired of this encounter. I just want it to be over with, and you can make it over with, and you get all the, like, there's no XP detriment or anything like that. I will say the game is actually pretty tough, so it actually uses these features to allow the game to be a little bit more difficult. I'm in a late-stage boss that has three phases. And I always seem to lose out on phase three, because basically the ghost monster that you're fighting, like, splits into two and has full HP on both, like, halves. Yeah. So, I don't know if it's particularly well balanced, but at least they're trying for something. Like, if nothing else, I'd say Ikenfell is a very sincere game. Like, it is very sincerely trying to go for this semi-hardcore, but, like, casual, friendly RPG.
So, can I ask, your description of the combat, I understood what you were saying, but I can't quite connect the dots. So, is it like Mega Man Battle Network meets Paper Mario?
In a way, yes. There's no real-time aspect besides doing the timing stuff. Like, you position yourself on the grid and then you choose your attack, but if you are in a bad position, you can always back out and reposition yourself as long as your character has the movement for it. So think of it like a little bit like Final Fantasy Tactics.
Okay,
but like it's closer to Final Fantasy Tactics than it is Mega Man Battle Network, which I love the Mega Man Battle Network games a whole lot. But it's not quite like this. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know how much further I'll get into it. The story's okay. Like, the characters are... I'm trying to think of how to put this. Like, none of them are particularly resonating with me, but that's fine. It's not going to resonate with everybody. It's just, I will say there is a little bit of novelty to, like, see a character who uses Neo pronouns, and it's just a fact of the narrative. Like, there's no long-winded explanation for it. It's just sort of is.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this question as the end of the year, looms. Do you think I should be playing this in regards to some award categories? I definitely want to play it. It's just a question of, do I need to try and get to it before the end of the year?
I think it's worth checking out. I think it has some interesting ideas. I don't know if it necessarily executes on all those ideas perfectly well, but it tries some new stuff. And you can always fall back on the accessibility features if you just kind of want to like blaze through the game and just like see where the story goes. Mm-hmm. Or... you just are not feeling the combat, you can adjust those things. I will say, if you're playing out on the Switch version, turn the vibration setting all the way down, because the vibration at default is like set to like max, and it like completely rumbles my Switch, and it's kind of discomforting. So I just turned that down, and it's a much more manageable rumble. They don't use HD rumble, like most things don't use HD rumble. It's just a little overbearing in that regard. But other than that, I don't have a lot of bad things to say about Ikenfell. I think it's worth giving a shot. It's on Game Pass right now. So if you have the Xbox Game Pass, you could just try it. I got it on Switch, and it is less than $20. I would say it's still worth it, and I will be interested to get back into it, and maybe I'll just skip the boss and grind a few more levels so I'm ready for the next bosses down the line, or just skip the bosses and see where the story goes, because the story does go in some interesting directions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely, with it on Game Pass, it's an easy, like, there's no question that I want to play it. It's just, you know, it's dumb because it doesn't matter at all for us.
Uh-huh.
But, like, because, you know, it's not like anyone is paying us for our Game of the Year coverage or anything. But I still take it fairly seriously, and I'm like, I need to make sure I play the important games before the end of the year.
A6, you should really play Paradise Killer.
I'm not going to do that, Jennifer.
Wait, why not?
It's a visual novel about murdering people. I'm good.
No, it's... I guess it kind of is, but it's a lot different than that description. But fair enough.
Maybe you could defend Paradise Killer when it comes to our game of the year.
Yeah, talks. You know what? Off the air. I don't want to spend airtime on this because I don't know how productive it would be. But if you wanna DM me and be like, hey, no, listen, you don't get it, I'll listen to that argument. You know.
Okay.
Anyway, Jen, what have you been playing?
So I've been kind of jumping around with various things. Like, I've started a lot of things, like 4 or 5 games recently, and I haven't stuck with them super much. I haven't stuck with most of them
super
to the point.
Much.
Yeah, I haven't really stuck with them to the point where I haven't played enough of them to feel super comfortable talking about them, but...
You did recently beat and complete Amnesia Rebirth.
Yeah, that's a good one to start with. Yeah, after... after 5 years... 5 years after they finished Soma, and they were like, okay, we need to come up with something that will not take us 5 years to develop, but they ended up taking 5 years anyway. Frictional Games released their newest horror game, Amnesia Rebirth, which is, even though there was another Amnesia game that came out from a different developer, this is the closest thing we get to a direct sequel to The Dark Descent, and I feel like that creates a lot of expectations for them, just because Amnesia The Dark Descent more or less defined YouTube LPs. Like, its influence is still felt with the kind of horror games that are being made, and basically an entire genre of streaming. And, Soma, 5 years later, was a situation where, okay, we've made a story that is so interesting that a lot of people who aren't into horror are like, hey, could you find a way to maybe let us play this, because we really want to see how it goes? And it's just a really phenomenal narrative. And, coming back 5 years later, with both of those heavy hitters in your past, it's really difficult to make something that will be as memorable. And I feel like that's maybe their biggest problem with Amnesia Rebirth, in that, like, one game, like Amnesia The Dark Descent, would be... most developers would never even get close to that again. That they did so much with Soma is kind of a miracle, and then here it's like, okay, this is still excellent, but I'm not really feeling it like I was with these other two, in terms of...
Not feeling the love?
Yeah, it's in terms of it doesn't feel as revolutionary as the other ones, but there's still... this is still a company that's been making horror games for 13 years or so, and it really shows in the way that they... it really shows in the way that they design it, from the fact that you're just constantly going from new vista to new vista. Like, the game is gorgeous. It has so much variety to its environment, which is impressive considering it takes place in the desert. Mm-hmm. And the thing that impressed me the most is that, unlike most horror games, they really seem to be going out of their way to push you to the finish. Like, I'd say a lot of horror games of its type treat finishing them like some massive achievement, like, oh, good job, you've conquered the unconquerable, you've finished something that's very unfair or very scary, and you've done it. And Amnesia Rebirth is still very scary, but the way that they pace it to the mechanics inside of it, it's very clearly pushing you towards the end in an interesting way. Like, I'd say one really impressive part is that when I'm around monsters and stuff like that, there's very clearly moments where I'll get to a specific part, or they'll have me do something to advance. That's like, oh yeah, you thought you could just sneak past everyone, now you're just gonna have to run. And it's this great moment of, okay, all of this pressure that was building up within me it's just releasing in one go, and then I'll be somewhere safe for like the next 5 or 10 minutes before having to go back down.
It seems like they're really interested in trying to, like, as a studio, Amnesia was very much a game that as you say, sort of revolutionized the space with its approach. It seemed like at the time the reaction of people was like, oh, this is a lot, the way it does stuff is a lot scarier than a lot of games we played. And then since then, they've been really interested in trying to find new ways to make horror accessible.
Yeah, like the pacifism mode in Soma was something that they patched in later just because they saw other people were making mods for it and figured, okay, we could probably do something to make the monsters less oppressive while still giving people a thrill going through this space. And even though Amnesia Rebirth doesn't really have a mode like that, the way that it handles death without getting into too much story spoilers or anything like that, death is incredibly forgiving. Like, there was one moment where I was stuck in a room that was almost maze-like, and I ended up getting caught a few times just because I was really bad at fumbling my way through, and it kind of just deposited me near the exit. And that was both relieving and a little bit like, oh, this might be going a little too far, but I feel like they're good at either giving you hints or just making things a little bit easier for you if it seems like you're having a tough time.
Mm-hmm. So, like, not always successful, but we're playing in that space and trying to find ways to make the game more accommodating.
Totally, yeah. And that also goes towards, I guess at this point it's okay to say that, without getting into too many mechanical spoilers, there is a hold down button to talk to someone else thing.
Mm-hmm.
And initially that idea seemed incredibly silly to me, like, oh, this is just press F to pay respects, but with something that's a bit more of a personal subject. But holding down that button leads to your protagonist saying things to reassure the person they're talking to, while also, like, the things that they're saying also apply to the things I would basically tell myself when going through a horror game. Like, it's okay. We just need to, restating the objective somewhat, we just need to get past this point. We can find a lit area over there. It won't be too long before we're back at the surface. We just need to hold on and get through this shit. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Okay. It still sounds like I wouldn't be able to handle it, but, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. Like, you can tell that a lot of it is pretty scripted in terms of the encounters, but those scripted encounters are impeccable in how scary they are. So there was definitely bits where I could tell that I wasn't going to get got right then, but they were just reminding me, oh yeah, pretty soon something's going to be after you.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to play around with you and make you not understand when until the last minute.
And what do you think of the, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this, like, the arc of their safe mode was a pretty clear progression, right? Safe mode was like, okay, this is just way more accessible for people who can't do horror. And now this, the thing they do here is sort of like controlling the pacing and reacting to how you feel. As a studio, do you feel like they're being like pulling back from safe mode, or they're just trying a different solution?
I think they're trying a different solution. Like, I think that they wanted to tell a story without necessarily turning all the monsters off. And mm-hmm. I can definitely respect that. But they also were like, well, people like reassurances that they'll be able to get through something mostly unscathed. What can we do to help the people who played Soma in safe mode get through this as well? So they are pushing you past your comfort point somewhat, just in terms of having these very intense moments, and like at some point they even had to patch it recently because it has the whole fear system that Amnesia the Dark Descent had, except in this one, when you're getting to the edge of that, images start flashing up on screen, and basically the audio cue and the severity of those flashes was way too much, and accidentally got read as jump scares, so they're like, oh shit, we didn't mean to do this, we're toning this down a bit. Mm. And it is much better, like, the way that it is now. It's not nearly as freaky as it was before, but, yeah, they've definitely... You could definitely see them... I feel like after Amnesia the Dark Descent hit it big, they've been spending the previous 10 years trying different things to, like, okay, so we had this phenomenal success that's gonna have us set for a very long time. What can we do to experiment within this space? And in that regard, I feel like Amnesia Rebirth is really fascinating and worth playing because it's interesting to see these people who essentially nailed it a few times step out of their own comfort zones and be like, what if we tried to still keep the same level of terror while offering people who aren't down with that some points of comfort?
What if we took some points, perhaps, from a recent Kojima game?
Oh, yeah. Death Stranding kind of had a similar thing, huh?
Yeah, you totally had a dedicated talk to your baby function. I don't actually think that's what they're doing, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like the main thing that kind of holds it back is that the story itself just isn't as interesting as it was with Soma. Like, Amnesia the Dark Descent story, I don't think was particularly good. Soma, I really liked its narrative. And Amnesia Rebirth is better told and more interesting than the Dark Descent in terms of narrative. But also, there's not going to be some amazing holy shit moment within the story that you're just going to be thinking about for weeks after, like Soma managed. It's one of those things where I feel like maybe if they didn't have multiple endings here, they could have delivered a stronger punch at the end like they did with Soma. But yeah, it's one of those things where it just kind of ends and you're like, okay, yeah, I guess I just watched the culmination of everything just there, but I don't feel particularly moved by any of it.
All right, fair enough. Well, I will talk about a game that can transition into a game that we've both played. I have been playing Let It Die on the PlayStation 4.
Oh, until someone mentioned that game like a few days ago, I forgot that it was even still up.
Yeah, actually, like, there was, like, yesterday I had to restart the game because there was an update. I mean, like, they're still doing stuff for that game. So Let It Die is a Suda51 free-to-play roguelike game with some PvP elements. If you want to be super, super flip about it, you could just say Punk Souls. That gets the basic idea across.
Yeah, Punk Souls, where your voice, the voice guiding you around is your crazy Uncle Death.
Yeah, Uncle Death, he's the Grim Reaper with, like, LED shades with various effects on them, who rides around on a skateboard. Uncle Death is great. Whenever you, like, there are times where you stun an enemy and you get an execution, and whenever you do one of those executions, Uncle Death, like, slides in from the corner of screen like the Mortal Kombat toasty guy and is like, sick! That was awesome! I think Let It Die is, I've played enough that it is quickly turning into a free-to-play hellscape, but I have had a good time with it. The combat is enjoyable, but kind of a mess, because the thing I figured out is it kind of does, like, it does a lighter version, but it is sort of reminiscent of that, like, you know, Dark Souls style of, like, animation priority, right? Mm-hmm. But against average, if you're fighting an enemy one-on-one, most enemies in the game are humanoid, and they get staggered when they're hit. And do you know what the fastest weapon in the game is? At least through, like, the first 20 floors, which is a lot of the game. It's your fists. It's fighting unarmed. Huh. So, against a lot of enemies one-on-one, you are better off taking off your weapons to make sure you get the first hit in and then just stun lock them. Which doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that sounds weird. Like, I definitely remember my time with it, like a few years back, and I never tried that.
It's especially egregious because some of the weapons, like one of the most common weapons I've been finding, is the iron, which is like a clothes iron, and it's a very like funny weapon in that it's like it's a gas powered iron. It has like a little gas tank attached to it, and it just like, oh, it gets really hot and shoots tons of steam, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's trash. It is one of the worst weapons I've ever used in a game like this. And they're everywhere.
Damn.
Though its execution is you like you grab a person, bend them over your knee like an ironing board, and iron their face until they explode, which is pretty good.
That's pretty stellar.
Yeah, it's a game that is it's extremely style over substance, but the substance isn't that bad, and so you kind of just want to keep going to see more of the style, I guess.
Yeah, and one of the things that really stuck out to me when I was playing it is that the soundtrack, which was put together by Akira Yamaoka, just being like, okay, I'm going to find 100 bands or so that I'm kind of into and have them create their own song and call it Let It Die.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in hindsight, like, trying to find specific songs you like that you hear in the game is a fucking nightmare because they're all called Let It Die, but they're all, from what I heard, they're all pretty good tracks.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, and the game is just like bristling with personality. The concept of the game is that you are actually playing a game within a game. You are playing as a person sitting in an arcade with your friend Uncle Death playing Let It Die on this arcade machine. This like VR arcade machine, and you can like back out and talk to Uncle Death or talk to the guy nearby who's playing fighting games who will give you some tips because he's beaten Let It Die before. There's some fun stuff. They don't do too much with it, but what they do is fun. And just, I don't know, like there's this whole aesthetic of like you get multiple characters and they're stored in like basically a meat locker. And like you open the meat locker and switch characters, or you can go raid other people's bases, and I don't know. I'm having a decent time with it, but I can feel that the end of the game is still a little ways away, but the end of my interest in it is coming.
Basically when the paywall gets too steep, right?
Yeah. I mean, like I fought a boss that I had gotten a number of free death coins, the premium currency, but I had to continue three times against this boss because it just kept doing this move that would one-shot me and not allowing me any opportunities to fight back. And it's like, okay, I just have to keep hitting continue until he happens to be stuck in a position where I can hit him some.
Jeez.
It's like, this kind of sucks, and that didn't happen with earlier bosses, so I can only assume that sort of thing is going to happen more and more until it's a point where I just am not interested anymore.
Yeah. Did you end up using any of the VIP elevator, or do you have to buy, or do you have to spend real money for that one?
Well, here's the other thing is, I can't tell, for a game that has this whole premium system, it communicates it incredibly badly. I might have some free passes to use the elevator. I can't tell. And then I was like, let me look at the store and figure out how much it would cost. I was like, I could pay the $15 a month subscription to the game to get access to that. But if I don't want to do that, I don't know how to get the premium stuff. Like, I don't know how to spend money. It's kind of embarrassing how bad they are at this.
Yeah, which is why I'm kind of amazed it's still running at this point. Clearly, they have enough people hooked into it that someone's figured out how to spend money on it.
I mean, the aesthetics are pretty good.
Yeah.
I was running around in, I had a paper bag over my head. I had an apron on with nothing else because it just comes with the apron, like a leather apron, and then a pair of denim jeans and two baseball bats. And I was cleaning house. Because I know I said the thing about unarmed, but that's only 1v1. If you have groups, you need a weapon that has a bigger arc.
Makes sense.
That sounds like a Suda game. All right.
Oh, speaking of Suda games.
Oh, yeah, they released No More Heroes 1 and 2 this week on Switch out of the blue, like to the point where I was just checking my phone and I saw someone tweet out, "Oh, hey, No More Heroes is on Switch," and I made a noise that woke up Kyrie. Like, what the fuck?
Wait, was the noise fuckhead?
No, it was just like, oh, I wish. But yeah, that was maybe the fastest I've ever gone into the eShop and bought two games, because it was like, yeah, it was partially because I still slightly couldn't believe it. Like, okay, I have to grab this or else it won't be real. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, like, I had tried playing No More Heroes 1 a few months ago on Dolphin, but not having a sensor bar conveniently near my PC made it a bit difficult, so...
Just use candles.
Yeah, I'm just gonna light a candle every time I go play PC game.
Like two candles, Jennifer.
Yes, you do. It's not that hard.
It's mood lighting.
Also, you'd need two candles.
Yes.
Okay.
I remember back in the day of the Wii, I went to go play, I brought my Wii with me to go play Brawl at a friend's house who was in a different city, and I realized I hadn't brought my sensor bar, and I just piled up some receipts and set them on fire long enough to get through the menu because Brawl itself doesn't need the sensor bar.
Holy shit.
I'm kind of hardcore.
Oh,
take that, Melee.
Yeah, it's like, it's a 20-year-old game, but it's still incredibly impressive how, well, not 20, 15-year-old game. But
yeah,
it's still,
let's say, it's not that old.
It's still really impressive how well it runs on the Switch, just like having the Wii version in my head. Like, just the opening scene of Travis leaping off his motorcycle yelling fuckhead as he slices some heads off. That runs perfectly. It's like, holy shit, this is already worth the money.
And it's still a really fun game. The game has problems, absolutely. The open world is kind of pointless. And the combat can, like, the levels can be a little too long. But, like, the basic combat's still just really fun and satisfying.
Yeah. Were you playing with motion controls or using a controller?
I was playing it handheld.
Okay. Because they totally have all the original motions from that Wii version.
Yes.
Including the whole lightsaber charging thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Of course. How could they not?
Or could they not?
I assume we both also picked up No More Heroes 2, but have not played it yet because we're waiting to finish 1.
Correct, yeah. I have never touched 2 at all, but I figured since it has a launch sale going on, might as well.
I remember the combat not being quite as, not having quite the same feel. Like, No More Heroes 1 just has, like, with, like, the hit stop and stuff and just, like, the perspective, the combat feels really meaty in a way that is really good. And I remember it not being quite as satisfying on an individual fight basis, but a lot of the other mechanics around the game being much better, so...
Yeah, something I really love about No More Heroes 1 combat is, like, when you slice someone, it always does a slot roll, and occasionally you'll get lucky and pick up a power-up.
Strawberry on the shortcake.
Hell yeah. And the effect where the entire screen just posterizes or inverts colors as you're blowing people to bits with baseballs and things like that. it's just really beautiful. And it makes you think about how, oh yeah, this game, like, even though it released at a time when other hardware was kind of eclipsing the Wii and stuff like that, it's like, they have a really strong look here.
Yeah, like, from what I can tell watching Jen play it, they barely, like, they make the game run at 60 frames per second and in widescreen, but I don't know if they've necessarily done anything else. Oh, they also upscaled it to, I assume, 1080, because, like, the Switch is more powerful than the Wii in, like, every conceivable way.
It's definitely a lot less blurry.
Yes. Yeah. So they've obviously done some work to it, but it's very clear that the art style from the original game was just so strong that they barely had to do any work to it.
Mm-hmm. Totally, yeah. I definitely want to get back into it soon, because it'd be nice to finish that game for once, just because I really like a lot of the stuff Suda does visually, and even storytelling sometimes, like, he just has a really interesting ear for dialogue and things like that.
Yeah. And so, spoiling two things from two. One is not that spoilery. One, the combat in two is a lot more, like, in this one, you can get other beam sabers. You can unlock them from Dr. Naomi. But you have to switch them while at your apartment. In two, basically, you've just got, like, a wallet chain that just has every beam saber on it.
Hell yeah.
And one, they've got, like, you know, like, they've got physics on them, so as you're walking, they're just kind of bouncing around, but also you just have, like, six different beam sabers you're switching between, and that's very fun. And the other one, so, for those who aren't aware, I mentioned Strawberry on the Shortcake. The power-ups in this game, the slot machine things, are all named after characters from a shmup that exists in the game that Travis is a fan of. He's just shouting the names of characters from his favorite anime game.
Wait, is that the poster on his wall that he says Moe to?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Excellent.
And you can play that shmup in the game. But the best one is Cranberry Chocolate Sundae, which is the one where the game turns, like, black and white except for the beam saber, and you just walk up to and execute everyone who's cowering. And that one comes back in two, but it works a little differently. Because instead of, like, the screen turning all weird and Travis just walking up and executing, you just turn into a tiger. You just turn into a tiger and people start screaming and, like, scrambling away on their like, hands and knees, and you walk up to them and just rip their faces off.
Oh wow. So they took the tiger from the power-up meter and basically turned Travis into him.
Yeah, you just become a tiger. It's so good.
Oh, that's excellent.
Now, was Desperate Struggle on the Wii as well, or was that, like, a okay?
Yeah, they were both on the Wii.
Okay.
I believe there was a PS3 re-release called No More Heroes Paradise. That was a re-release of one. And I suspect that this Switch port is based on that. Because they did some upscaling for that.
But I would love to see, like, a comparison between, like, the different versions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would also be curious.
Yeah, as it turns out, also, like, the team that did this specific port of it were also the people who brought Killer 7 to PC, so there's a potential chance that No More Heroes may also hit PC at some point, which would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be happy for PC version, or PC people if that happens, but I'm quite happy with the Switch version. It's great.
Yeah. They should also bring Killer 7 to Switch.
They could do that. I'd be all right with that.
It would be cool to play Killer 7 on the Switch, but also with the GameCube controls. Like, that would be cool to be able to, like, use the GameCube adapter and play with the original GameCube controls, like, on an HD version of Killer 7.
One of the things that Suda 51 does with his characters that I really like, they suck. They're all really shitty. But I really enjoy the, like, the singular thing where you have this anime trope of people, like, beating, you know, winning the fight and being like, oh, that was a good fight, or you're such a good fighter. And in, like, all of Suda's games, there are characters who do the complete opposite. Like, Travis will decapitate someone and then shout at their collapsing corpse, "You're a joke." It's like, he's already dead, Travis. Be nice. I love it. It's so good.
Travis is a shithead.
He's such an asshole.
Yeah, the end of that first boss fight, the guy's like, "Oh, thank you. I was waiting for death." And Travis is like, "No, you're supposed to hate this. Fuck you." And then decapitates him.
"Here's your ticket to paradise, old man." Cuts his head off.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I know that I've said enough about the Silver Case that Six will never play it, but I am kind of excited to see how characters from the Silver Case will tie back into these future No More Heroes games, because apparently with Travis Strikes Again and No More Heroes 3, he's leaning into tying a lot of it together.
I'm sure it'll still be stylish for people who don't, who haven't played Silver Case, though.
Oh, yeah. Like 80% of why I got something out of that original Silver Case game is just because it's goddamn gorgeous and stylish. So if he continues making stylish games, I imagine everyone will win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Though, Killer is Dead still fucking sucks, man. You whiffed that one.
Yeah, I hear that from a lot of people. I have not checked it out yet, but
I think there is a recurring mini game where you just sit next to a lady and stare down her shirt. It fucking sucks.
That sucks.
Yep, it's bad. There is some cool stuff in that game, but they pretty much ruin it.
Yeah, the only positive thing I've heard about that game consistently is, man, Suda 51 hates the fucking moon.
Is that a positive thing? I love the moon.
The moon's great. You get to howl at it.
But it's interesting to see games from a person who continuously is like, "Hey, fuck the moon."
Fuck you, Suda.
The moon's great.
Moon rules.
Yeah. They found water on the moon.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
Yeah, you just know, like, in 5 years' time, we're going to be drinking some of that moon sweat.
No, we're not. Someone else is. Rich people
Someone
are.
Someone else will. Rich people are, and hopefully they'll catch a disease.
Yeah, God willing.
Yeah. Fucking moon madness.
I have one other game, but I'll do the rounds first, because it's way too topical. So does anybody else have anything that they're playing they want to talk about? Obviously, we have other things we're playing, but, you know.
I have one game I want to talk about.
I would love to hear about it.
I want to talk about the Jackbox Party Pack 7.
Oh, never mind. No longer interested.
Oh, darn.
I'm kidding.
I'll keep it short, but because I plan on writing an article on the Jackbox Party Pack 7, specifically two games within it. But I think this is one of the best party packs they've put out. And if you had told me that Quiplash would be the weakest link of the five games, I would have thought you were a crazy person. And then I realized, oh, Quiplash isn't that fun.
Mm. Huh. What makes it not fun?
I just think that the prompts in this particular, like, version of Quiplash just feel a little phoned in. Like, none of them particularly stand out as being funny, like, or conducive to comedy, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Like, I think the best party pack games help you set up the punchline and the setup, or help you do the setup and the punchline effectively.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think Talking Points is particularly strong in this pack, because in Talking Points, you are giving a slideshow presentation on the fly, And there is a cooperative aspect where another player sets you up with the text and images that you have to talk about and explain.
Mm-hmm.
And I found Talking Points to be really just a genuinely fun time, because you had the you take the awkward energy of doing a PowerPoint presentation with the absurdity of, like, just some pretty wild images. And I think that that particular game works because you are... The jokes come from, like, a place of just how awkward it is to give a presentation. But everybody has kind of been there. So instead of trying to come up with funny quips, like in Quiplash, where you're trying to make possibly the most shocking or, like, interesting thing in the room, Talking Points has you just trying to get through this presentation in one piece.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a fun, chaotic energy to that.
I think the best Jackbox games are the ones where, like, once you've played them a couple of times, you kind of stop paying attention to the score because you're having fun just on the pure social interaction.
Oh, yeah. And there is something really fun and pure about Talking Points' ability to just make you talk about some ridiculous things. And it's a lot of fun. And the scores, like, the scores feel secondary. Like, you hand out awards at the end of the game, but even then, like, you fill in what type of award it is, so there's just more silliness to be had with it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Quiplash is a very competitive game, like, you're explicitly going for points, and sometimes that can just be a little too much, like, pressure to, like, you have a pressure to be funny, whereas in Talking Points, you are just more welcome to, you know, go with the flow of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another thing that's interesting, I haven't played too much of Party Pack 7 yet, but a lot of, like, sometimes there is, like, a mini meta that occurs within a Jackbox session where you have, like, these jokes that end up, like, sort of becoming, like, recurring and cyclical, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Talking Points does a good job of breaking that up because... you have the one person running the presentation and the other person supplying them with material, and the list of material is like, how are you going to work the man, like, dementedly smiling into his mirror covered in shaving cream into your existing goof? You're not. You have to create a new goof.
Exactly. And even the person setting up the material can be like, okay, we've seen this image 5 times. Let's go with a new image. And it keeps you on your toes as the presenter.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, overall, I think the pack is really fun. Like, it's worth playing if you got a bunch of friends on a Discord call together. I think it is a pretty spectacular time. Like, not for nothing, the other games are pretty fun. Like, the devil in the Details is a complicated game, but once you get it, it's this, like, silly cooperative affair that I imagine is funnier for the person observing it than, like, the people playing it. Mm. But it's still, like, an entertaining time.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Blather Round is like you have a lot of silliness with the text-to-speech engine in that game. It's more chill, I think. It's still a little bit more competitive because you're trying to go for points, but it is also a game of collaboration.
Yeah, I feel like that one leans more towards cooperation than competitiveness, because you also get points for guessing it first, so it feels like both the person who has the prompt and the people that are guessing are trying to work with one another to figure out the answer.
Yeah, because the person who has the prompt gets, like, more points the faster somebody gets it, so they are incentivized to actually put together these ridiculous phrases to, like, guide the group towards the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And Champed Up is just a fun drawing game. The funny thing about Champed Up is that if you do multiple rounds of it, you can bring back previous drawings from previous rounds. So that kind of leads into the cyclical humor of a Jackbox game, which can be its own weakness. But there is something potentially fun to, like, having a drawing that you had from round one finally, that didn't get that many laughs, like, finally have their time to shine.
Mm. Gotcha.
Yeah, and I feel like there's a difference between the other cyclical stuff, like in Quiplash, someone comes up with a prompt that they themselves think is funny, and then they just use it for every single prompt, or something like this, where if you swap something back in, it's not something that you're just writing out again, it's you have to basically pick from whatever's already been said, so it feels like less making the same joke and more using what's in your arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm going to write an article on kind of comparing the mechanics of Quiplash and Talking Points, so look forward to that. I'll be out and...
Don't give dates on articles. It's just not worth it.
Yeah,
not yeah, worth it.
That's a mistake I used to make on the site pretty early on. Well, I made it for a few years, and I was like, wait, we're all busy. This isn't our main job. It's pointless to do that kind of thing.
Yeah. It'll come out when it comes out.
Exactly.
So I haven't played enough of it to talk about it in too much detail, but I did get the early access for Teardown, which came out earlier this week and is pretty much lighting up the Steam charts. And it's basically a voxel-based heist game where you have a hammer, you have spray paint, you have a fire extinguisher, and at some point you also get a blowtorch. And you're basically getting jobs where it's like, hey, could you steal this thing from me, or could you break this thing for me, but do it kind of quietly? You're not going to do it quietly. You're going to walk into this room with a mallet, and you're going to just break all the shit. And you're going to break shit that you don't even need to break, because it's there. And because occasionally you can find something on your way out that is worth something.
Hmm.
And it's a very silly sort of game. Like, you have very few adjectives at your disposal other than destruction. So, like, when you're waking up after the first job, there's your alarm clock's going off. And, of course, the only thing that you have to stop the alarm clock is your mallet. So you smash your mallet through the alarm clock and through the table. Tom Francis, who did Gunpoint and whatever that space game was that I'm forgetting that wasn't as memorable as Gunpoint. Heat Signature. Yeah, he's been waiting for this game for years, and he's like, well, Animal Crossing is one kind of game we need in 2020, but we also need a game where we just break shit in 2020, and this is a game where you can break shit and break your way through, and occasionally you'll have a little bit more challenge, like, oh, if you grab this one thing, then a timer starts and you have to get out of the level before it goes off.
Hmm.
It's also, like, this is fairly common for games that are this voxel heavy, but I have a computer that is pretty powerful. It's kind of aging over time, but I'd say it's powerful, and I get a lot of this slowdown when I'm just going hog wild with the destruction.
Well, it is also early access, so maybe that's the thing that they're gonna work on is optimization, right?
That too, yeah. I do hope that they slowly add a little bit more to the missions too. Like, I do think that it's kind of nice that I can just walk into an environment and take it apart piece by piece in creative ways with my hammer, or I can take out my spray paint and write something silly on the walls. But yeah, there's a point where you are kind of just going into these areas that would normally be populated but are complete ghost towns, and breaking shit and then leaving it under the guise of a heist game. But there's not really much... Like, there's not really much tension other than the occasional, if you grab this, you need to get out fast. At least at the part where I am.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I have also been playing a recent release. I have been poking at Watch Dogs Legion.
The third one of these things.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I played a couple of hours. And so this game's very ambitious, right? The premise of the game, they're like, hey, it's like London is under fascist occupation, and we, the British people, need to rise up and you know, take back our city. And hey, you know what? Anyone can be a hero. And so to that end, every NPC you see is procedurally generated, except for, you know, there are a few that are, you know, like plot important, and so they're generated that way. And in theory, I guess any of them can be recruited. Some of them are, it seems like I probably would have to do something special to recruit them. Like, they even have these profiles for, like, the private security company I'm fighting, Albion. But all their profiles have, like, when I pull up my phone to look at the profile, they have a big red thumbs down, which I assume means that it would be really hard to convince them to fight themselves.
Yeah.
which is, I guess, valid. But it's interesting. I don't know yet if this game is good, right? I am too early for that. What I know is that a lot of the choices they've made are really fascinating from the perspective of, like, what it means to have a game where everyone's playable. First of all, yeah. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, yeah, I heard, like, I saw in Austin Walker's review, he mentioned that there was some job at a hospital, and because he ended up recruiting a nurse, he was able to get in there Hitman style, where, except in Seven Disguise, it was just, oh, the person going to their job, but they're going to do some shit there while they're there.
Yeah, you, when you're looking at people with your phone, it lists, like, their perks, and occasionally, like, their, you know, their pros and cons, right? Sometimes they don't have cons, sometimes they don't have pros. If you hover over a person who's a nurse or a surgeon, it'll say, like, oh, and they have uniformed access to, you know, medical facilities. They can just go into medical facilities. Or a construction worker can go on a construction site. Or a cop, if you get a cop, which, why would I guess maybe a mission will make me, but until then I'm not recruiting any fucking cops.
Yeah, fuck that.
You know, can go into, like, areas that are, like, law enforcement only. Stuff like that. But there's also stuff like, oh, the construction worker has access to, like, construction drones, which can be used for, like, heavy lifting. This person is the moderator of a amateur bomb maker forum, and when you recruit them, he's just got a grenade launcher.
What?
This person is, like, a CEO. And so you get extra money when you recruit him, because he just has money lying around. And also he has a sports car he can whistle up at any time, but he can't sprint because he's like 70 years old.
Oof.
And like also this extends to like even their animations, right? Like I was playing as your first character you pick from like they generate like 20 characters and they're like, hey, pick one, and I picked this lady and you go through the tutorial with her and she learns to fight and everything. And so like her melee moves and like were just like, you know, like classic, like, okay, like duck and punch and like choke out and stuff. And then I recruited like this, like Eastern European hacker guy. And he doesn't punch people so much. Like when you do a finisher with him, he just pulls out a taser and just zaps them because he can't punch someone out. Are you kidding? And it's interesting stuff like that. There are characters who, I saw a character and I want to recruit one of those characters because this might actually suck, but it's interesting. There was a character who was like, oh, this character is doomed. There is a possibility they'll just die at some point.
Oh.
Because I guess presumably that's their coy way of saying that they've got a chronic illness of some sort, I guess. But like, this person could just die. And these characters aren't just like one. I have subtitles on. And so as you're walking around, everyone you see has a name. Like whenever you never just get like, you know, like pedestrian such and such. It's always like Jennifer or like Angela or like Marcus. Right. It's always a named person. And they have their line. And also, it seems like everyone already has a personality. And so, like, there's less, it feels a little less generic walking around. You can see how people are reacting to stuff. And also, I've had instances where, like, I just see my other characters walking around. Because you can recruit a bunch of characters to your team. And I went to a location as the European hacker guy. And I did my job and I walked out. And I just saw one of my other characters, like a protester lady who I'd recruited, just walk by. I was like, oh. And she had a little icon above her head. And I hovered over. She said, it said, your team. I was like, yeah. No, I know. I recruited her. Hi.
Interesting.
There's... Also, just before I know I'm just ranting here, but the other thing that's kind of not as well executed. So the procedural generation, at least thus far, has shown a few hiccups, right? It's not always a great fit. Like as I mentioned that protester, right? That was the first character I recruited. It's this lady who's a protester. She, like, when I recruit her, she's wearing, like, all black with, like, spiked leather, like, shoulders. Like very punk aesthetic. Her thing was, like, oh, she's been cited for kneeing one of the Albion, the private security officers, in the dick. It's like, she's a tough customer. And she has this, like, really, like, peppy high schooler voice that just does not fit her at all. And clearly it's just like, okay, well, we just pulled one of the voices from the female actress pool and assigned it to this female model, and it's like, this don't really match. Also, the lip syncing is a little, like, it fits, but it's a little sloppy.
Yeah, I imagine you get that with a game that is, I assume, like, not necessarily procedurally generated, but like, it's less author content.
Yeah.
Jen, you were about to say something?
I was just gonna say, do you feel like I'm not sure whether you played Watch Dogs 2 or not, but I feel like Watch Dogs 2, yeah, I feel like Watch Dogs 2 had a very specific flavor to its characters, and that the characterization around them was incredibly strong. Do you feel like any of that is present in Watch Dogs Legion, or do you think that the randomness... or the limitations of the random generation make you less capable of hooking on to specific people within your roster?
I mean, so I need to play more of it. I originally was like, I won't pick this up with Scanlan money. I'll use my own money because I don't know if I'm going to be able to write about this. I am going to be able to write about this. So far, with the characters I've seen, it's been a mix. Some have really had some interesting personalities that I've been able to latch onto. I do want to give a special shout out to your the DedSec AI, who is just this just a sarcastic AI, like peppy sarcastic, not especially unique, but like the element that everyone needs to make use of, right? No matter who you're playing as, you have to rely on the AI Bagley to get a lot of stuff done. And so he's sort of the connecting thread. And having him just basically make fun of you the whole time, lightheartedly. When I unlocked the ability to do, like, delivery missions, he was like, I believe his line was, oh, so people will pay you to handle their delicate packages very carefully. Also to send stuff. Ha ha. It's like, fuck off, Bagley.
Shut up. That's good. That's good, but shut the fuck up.
Yeah, it's the level of like slightly obnoxious, but like nice gremlin energy is kind of Bagley. And so that's enjoyable. But I think the protester lady that I got, I didn't find had too much personality. And that was kind of frustrating. And then the Eastern European hacker was like a story character. And I don't know if he was scripted or if it was just like, we generate this type of character for it. I couldn't tell. But then I recruited like a like Indian construction worker lady. And she seems really cool, and she's definitely randomly generated. So it seems like it's kind of hit and miss.
Okay. Yeah. I might check it out at some point, too. Either getting it or... either getting it using outright or just going on Uplay Plus for a month or something
sure,
like that.
Sure.
But, yeah, hopefully they start paying the hit record musicians that did music for that game, because none of them, as of the launch day, none of those musicians have been paid
yeah.
yet.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, there's a bunch of I feel a little mixed about the fact that I picked this game up, frankly. My curiosity got the better of me. I am pretty pissed at Ubisoft right now, and so I'm not sure. I'm not proud of myself for doing it. The one other thing I will say that I do like is it feels like they did take some feedback from Watch Dogs 1 and 2. Unless you pick a character who has, like, as one of their, like, perks, like, a gun license, you don't have a gun. You have, like, it's slightly in the future, so you have, like, a non-lethal, like, taser gun. But, like, I've played, yeah, 4 different characters. None of them have had guns.
Nice.
Which I really appreciate.
Yeah, like,
so,
sort of living up to like the original promise of what Watch Dogs 1 was supposed mm-hmm. to be.
But then also, like, I saw, you know, I was just walking around checking people's profiles, and there was a auctioneer who apparently in their free time was like a doomsday prepper, and if I picked them, they would just have had an MP5.
You did kind of mention before that you found someone with a rocket launcher.
A grenade
too.
Launcher, yeah. Yeah.
Grenade launcher.
Yeah. So, you know, it's I didn't end up recruiting that person. I think it's important to have some people in the resistance, but right now, early going, I gotta be picky. And I don't think a person who runs a bomb maker forum probably has the best interests of London at heart. After a series of bombings that start the beginning of the game.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah, the beginning of the game is like a failed mission. And it is interesting. They start you off by introducing you to like the first character, like somebody Dalton. I don't know. Dalton is just what they call him generally. At one point they say either his first or last name, whatever Dalton is not. and he's just like this suave guy in a suit. And you know, it ends with him just getting shot in the fucking head. So, but with him, he had a gun, but otherwise, yeah, he tries to defuse some bombs, and he is not successful ultimately. And so you have to start rebuilding dead sick.
It would have been really funny if they got the guy from like Watch Dogs 1 to be the protagonist for this, and then they just kill him off instantly.
Unfortunately, they took the other terrible route, which is, hey, if you get the season pass, you can recruit him and Wrench.
Oh. Oh, that's not fun.
I mean, you know, I want Wrench on my team. Wrench is great, but Aiden Pierce right. fucking... Though,
Aiden Pierce fucking
at
sucks.
The beginning of the game, it does the thing that I like. I really like that games are doing it more these days, where just like at the top, they're like, hey, go through all the settings before you start your game, basically. Mm-hmm. And I turned on, they didn't say this, but like this has to be the way the game is intended to be played. I turned on permadeath, right?
Right.
And so I'm thinking if I do get the season pass, I can just pick Aiden Pierce and then immediately get him shot in the head.
Yeah. I'll need to link you a sign that someone posted from one of the concession stands in that game, because there's some fun flavor text there too.
Okay, well now you've piqued my interest. But yeah, I think it's good. I like this game so far. I don't know if it's great. You know what? I should say, I think its ideas are good. I don't know if it is actually good, but I'm having a good time.
And at least sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like it's trying for something.
I love it when games try.
Yeah.
Any other...
Unlike those games that don't try, those lazy developers.
Listen, like, you say that, like, that's not... You say that the sort of, like, the ha-ha, like, six misspoke, as if there were developers who didn't try. Fucking... I don't... I'm not accusing individual developers of not trying. I think that, generally speaking, if you are a person working on making a game, you're doing your best. I know there are exceptions, but there are a few enough of them that they're not worth mentioning. However, overall, as, like, having a vision, there are teams that are not fucking trying.
Yep. video games.
Is anyone...
So what if you take...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to do a bit like... So what if you take this violent protagonist and you give them a son or a daughter, and you have scenes where you're going hunting together, being like, this is the way things are, son or daughter. You gotta shoot shit. And you slowly watch as the kid turns into a killer, too. It's a really good story about fatherhood.
It's the most... It is possibly the most damning thing I've ever heard from developers, is hearing developers who make these dad games do interviews being like, well, then I had a kid and I realized that women are people, too. And you're like, what the fuck, man? You just said that.
You said that like it was a positive.
Yeah, or in the case of God of War, women are people, but only sometimes, and they can be easily discarded.
It's just like there's a level of self of a lack of self-awareness that is, you have to at least be aware that you're not self-aware. Like, what the fuck, man?
I feel like to make it that far in a AAA capacity, making decisions, you do have to have a level of not knowing what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It's just...
Don't know what that says about the industry.
Good things. Only good things.
Only great things.
Can't wait for Cyberpunk.
Yeah, you should see... Yeah, you should see the quote that the CEO of CD Projekt Red said recently, where he's like, oh, well... Crunch isn't that bad because it's only testers at this point, and he had to send a letter immediately after that investor call being like, I'm so fucking sorry, guys. I shouldn't have said anything.
I mean, and it's just like the most, like, he said what he needed to say to investors, knowing it was a bad thing to say, and then turned to appease his employees. It's just, yeah, it sucks.
It sucks. Fuck CD Projekt Red.
Does anyone else have any other games they want to touch on before we get out of here?
I'm all good.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Well then, I guess that's it for us here. Thank you for joining us. Jen, where can people find you on the internet?
So I'm at GB3 on Twitter.com. Most of my stuff is on ScanlineMedia.com or Patreon.com/ScanlineMedia. I do occasional streams on Twitch TV /ScanlineMedia. It's something that I want to get into a little bit more, but I don't know. It's been a really rough couple of months lately, so I'll be back soon or whenever things are a little bit easier. And I also host a storytelling-focused video game podcast, Novel Not New, a True End podcast, which you can get to at readinggames.online.
Yeah, this podcast should be going out the same week as our episode on Signs of the Sojourner, which means that we'll be, you know, it'll be too late to give us questions for that. But if you have questions for our next game... Jen, prompting you.
Oh, yeah. Next, we're going to be playing Return of the Obra Dinn. And you can send questions about that to podcast@abnormalmapping.com.
Indeed. Kyrie, where can people find you?
You can find me at KyrieAPage on Twitter.com. I contribute to ScanlineMedia.com from time to time. And society. I try. I try my best. That's all we can really ask. That's all we can really do. I also host a Danganronpa podcast with Jen, Ultimate Despair Reprise. You can find that at UDespairCast on Twitter.com. We're going to have a new episode up probably around the same time this episode comes up. I just got to edit it together.
Ooh. Kinky.
Yeah. We're about halfway. We just crossed the halfway mark of Danganronpa 2.
It's a long game. Visual novels are too long sometimes.
Visual novels are long, and it's going to be a trek upcoming, although we're going to have a little bit of a break A Star Trek, yep. Absolutely. We're going to pivot Ultimate Despair Prize into a Star Trek podcast.
We're going to take it to the next generation.
Yep, we're just going to watch TNG a bunch. And say, man, that Patrick Stewart is sure.
Wow,
is
those guys, those people have like parasites, but are they really parasites? Because they're like helpful and they like them, so maybe it's a symbiote. Makes you think, doesn't it?
Makes you think something about Klingons.
They got wax on their heads. Big mood. Me after no, never mind. Nope, not going there with that joke. I mean, you know where I was gonna go with it, but. You know, candles and stuff. But if you want to find me, I'm on Twitter at sixstepmar, S-A-X-D-E-T-T-M-A-R. ScanlineMedia.com, patreon.com/ScanlineMedia. That's where my work is. I guess I'll, if everybody's shouting out a specific show, I will shout out, you know, I'll shout out The Garnet Wager because we've been doing so much work on that. I know I already did, but like, here's the serious pitch. We're watching The Genius, which is basically like a reality game show from South Korea that fucking owns. It's so, so good. And then in between that, we're doing weird mind games with each other. So if you want to listen to people talk about a great show while, like, three friends, while kind of actively fucking with each other, it's a great podcast. But until next time, folks, peace out.
See ya
later.